Ooh, on a cold Wednesday. Hi, everybody, and it's only going to get colder. Time for American Hit Radio
here. Oh, brace yourself,
on...
Margaret.
What's that?
I said, oh, brace yourself, Margaret.
Absolutely. Brace yourself indeed.
That's an Irish joke. That's an old Irish joke somebody told me.
One of my favorite short ones. But it is 5 p.m. Heidi and I, Heidi Morales and myself, Tom Ryan, are here every Wednesday and Friday between 5 and 6 to discuss all things musical. Although today, I feel like weather plays a big part in this. I'll be honest, I spent probably half of my day today at work trying to see if I could find a way to just sneak off into some sun-drenched climb for a short break. It's not an easy thing to do these days, apparently. It looks like they've got the whole, especially airlines, they've got it sussed so that they're almost, I guess we all know this, no plane seems to ever take off unless it's more or less filled. And they do everything that they can to make sure that the planes get filled. So the closer you get to the day you want to travel, the less likely it is that you're going to find something unless you are willing to spend a small or a large fortune.
Yes.
So you could just spend so much time digging around and digging around. I didn't care where I went. I had no real preference. Some place that was going to be warmer than 68 degrees. That was really my only criteria.
And where are we going?
Nowhere. Well, the best I've... Here, this is it. I couldn't book anything at all. So the best that I'm going to be able to do is bring you the warmth musically.
Okay, that's going to not be like... It's not going to be awesome. Let me just say that.
You don't think? Come on. Okay, it's not exactly the same as getting in an airplane and, say, finding yourself in Curacao or Barbados or Aruba.
Yeah, and I hear that Nassau, Bahamas actually has a really cool Mardi Gras, which we just missed. Jet's going to put that out there.
And we missed it. So you see, you're not really missing anything now. It's too late for that. Time marches on, my dear.
No, I'm just going to keep on being sad.
Well, I'll do what I can by saying, well, we'll do the musical equivalent for an hour. We'll be in the sun. We can take our coats off and we can bask in the warmth of hearing the Beach Boys. Don't look too thrilled.
Can you hear my underwhelmedness?
Well, it was, I don't know, a while back we started a series here on Wednesdays, which we were calling the Alternative Top 40. We were picking 500 of the best albums that never made the Top 40. And we got so far into it, somewhere in like, I guess around up to around 66 or 67, I believe. I don't remember exactly where we stopped. We did about 40 albums, about a year's worth of doing that. And then because I had a subsequent list or a companion list that listed what I was considering to be the 500 best albums that did make the top 40, I suddenly realized, why should I set myself up so that I am done with this whole thing in just 5 years? I plan on doing this for the next at least 10 more years. So let's do them both. So I've got some catching up to do. And what we've been doing now since just before the start of the new year was we're counting our way up through the top 500 of the top 40. And we start in January 1964. And so far we have covered 9 albums. Now, starting in 1964, you'd be correct to presume that an awful lot of the albums that we've covered so far in this series are Beatles albums. That is true. And at this point in time, we find ourselves in the summer of 1964, August, I believe. And this is album number 10, and it is the first time that the Beach Boys are making our list for one of the great albums. Now, we started in 1964, so that limits it already, right away. But the fact is, and this is pretty amazing to me, before this, the Beach Boys had already released 4 albums. This would be their 5th album. The 4 albums that they released all came out in 1 year's time.
Wow.
Amazing. In November of 62... they released Surf and Safari. In May of 63, Surf and USA. These are albums, not singles.
Right.
Both, actually. In October of 63, they released Surfer Girl. And Less than a month after releasing Surfer Girl, they released a car album called Little Deuce Coupe, which came out in November of 1963. Now, none of those albums could have made my list because they predate my list. But to be honest, they probably wouldn't have made the list anyway, by virtue of the fact that most of the material on those four albums consisted of course, a few quite excellent hit singles as the band developed and got better and better, and an inordinate amount of filler. The thing that made their fourth album special, which is called All Summer Long, was that it actually showed a little bit of maturity on the part of the band all of a sudden. I mean, three albums that were all about surfing, Surfing USA, Surfer Girl, Surfing Safari, and not to mention the fact that they wrote a surfing song for Jan and Dean that had become a big hit. I mean, I guess after all, you just kind of get tapped out on the subject, especially if, like Brian, you weren't really much of a surfer in the first place, which is probably why he switched to writing songs about cars for a while. Just let's try to exhaust another topic.
Right.
So he put out a theme album, like I said, called Little Deuce Coupe, which had that song as a hit. Good tune. 409 was grabbed from, it was an old track. They put that on there because it fit in with the program. And then a lot of other, like I said, a lot of filler material. Ballad of Old Betsy, Car Crazy Cutie, Cherry Cherry Coupe, things like that. Stuff that I would have no reason to really want to include it. What made All Summer Long cool, and why I did decide to include it, is that all of a sudden you got the impression that the Beach Boys were in this game to stay with this album. They were suddenly able to, like, mildly switch topics, have arrangements that were awesome, some of the best stuff that they had done up to date. And you just got a feeling that these guys were inspired by what was happening by the British invasion rather than threatened by it.
Okay.
So let's get right to it and play the lead-off track from the album, All Summer Long. I think you're going to know it because it was a big number one hit for the group, called I Get Around.
Round, round, get around, I get around.
Yeah,
get around, round, round, I get around.
I get around.
Where the kids are hip. My buddies and me, you're getting real well known. Yeah, the bad guys know us and they leave us alone.
I get around.
It's never been beat, and we've never missed yet with the girls we meet. None of the guys go steady, cause it wouldn't be right to leave your best girl home on a Saturday night.
I get around,
get around, round, round, I get around.
I think I'm starting to warm up. I could take my jacket off now. Feeling pretty good after hearing that song. Beach Boys always make me feel good. Such a happy band.
Yeah.
And the other good thing, the thing that I've noticed about the Beach Boys, they were very lucky in a lot of ways because the music changed so rapidly in 1964, too rapidly for most musicians. I mean, you know, popular singers who were around before the Beatles, at this point in time, by the summer of 1964, they were struggling to maintain any sort of relevance or just, you know, just basically even to stay alive in the music scene. The seismic shift in fan expectations, it simply meant that, you know, a lot of American acts couldn't exist anymore in the wake of the British invasion. If you were R&B-based or jazz-influenced, you all of a sudden seemed obsolete. The Beach Boys are one of the few acts that survived. Actually, they didn't just survive. They thrived after the British invasion. And it's probably for a couple of reasons. The first, I think, is that they were a band at a time when the very idea of a band was incredibly cool. It had a really strong commercial appeal. And up, you know, before the British invasion, you know, the idea of a band didn't necessarily mean much. But all of a sudden, after the Beatles, everybody wanted to be in a band. Everybody liked the idea of what a band represented. You know, bands were the coolest thing you could possibly be in 1964. And the other thing, obviously, is that they wrote their own material. And, you know, making them more or less self-contained and able to define their own fate, which was something that the Beatles had proved to be quite, you know, to do quite handily.
Right.
So
absolutely.
It was all of a sudden something that the record companies were expecting from groups, you know, rather than us paying and, you know, bringing you material and teaming you up.
Yeah,
you know,
sure. It's cost effective for them, for everybody involved.
Exactly. Do it for yourself. And of course, they had Brian Wilson, who started to prove himself capable of creating these, you know, soundscapes. These fully, you know, these totally fully realized arrangements that sort of suggested his hero, Phil Spector. You could hear it on that song, you know, right there, except that with one minor difference in that I would say that Brian's production is even a bit cleaner than Phil Spector's, because you can discern the instrumentation. You hear what the instruments are and you can hear what's going on behind them. For example, here's another song. At the time, this is amazing to me that this wasn't a huge hit single. I just always thought that this song was. But as it turns out, it was an album track that just got an awful lot of airplay. And maybe I got the feeling that it was a hit single because they used it in the movie American Graffiti,
which was
that first film about growing up in the early
60s. Suzanne Summers was the lady in the...
in the car, in the backseat of the car.
It's not a backseat, it's a two-seater, hon.
I thought she was like in that little round window section.
Yeah, but it's a two-seater.
No, it had to have a backseat because you wouldn't see her face in that little round window. It wasn't a Corvette.
It was an angle. It was a Thunderbird.
It was a Thunderbird, and the Thunderbird had a backseat.
Okay.
As I don't know. Whatever. We'll have to look that one up. But you're right, that was Suzanne Summers, wasn't it?
Yes.
Well, as the movie ended, this is the song that rolled. And it's one of my favorite early Beach Boys songs by a long shot. And I like it, especially because, again, you hear Brian thinking for a band that's still, you know, really young. Brian has this idea, let's open up with a xylophone. It sounds like such an uncool thing to do, and it sounds fantastic. Here's the second track off of the album, entitled All Summer Long. Happens to be the title track.
Long till summer.
Oh, it's at least 78 degrees in here now.
And getting hotter.
I hope it's not cruel to play great summer music just before the incredible
cold. The Christmas village is still up over there behind us.
Well, of course, that is the title track from the album. Clever arrangement, clever lyrics. Remember when you spilled Coke all over your blouse? It's clever, you know, smart. Now, the next track on the album is actually, it's a cover version. It's, the original version of this song was done by the Mystics. It dates back to 1959. But it suits the Beach Boys so well. And again, Brian puts, you know, is so fabulous at vocal arrangements, working with the group. And you can hear on this how he and Mike come together with Brian soaring incredibly high in the introduction of this song. And Dennis plays a big role in this harmonically. You hear Dennis, like, basically coming into the vocal blend somewhere, like, in the middle. And it's just a great piece of work. It was a great hit in 1959, and maybe it would have been sounding a little bit old-fashioned by 1964, except for the fact that, you know, the Beach Boys were somehow making everything old new again, in a sense, because of Brian's obsession with bands like the Four Freshmen and stuff. He actually played the song, and it suddenly sounded kind of cool in 1964. It might not have been the case had it not been for his work. Here's the Beach Boys with Hushabye. That you could just, I mean, I don't know, something, it's just stunning. Brian's vocal abilities back then, something that he could just do with such an incredible amount of perfection. He sounds just like a choir boy, and that's what he, I guess, he was emulating with the vocal groups that had inspired him. But a great version there of Hushabye. Now, this next track has got an interesting history. The song Little Honda. Again, great track. You know, Brian did a fabulous job of writing this thing. It's a great rock and roll song. It sounds like it's speeding up. It gives you the sense of, like, you know, of a little car racing down the street. And it was more or less guaranteed to be single material. But for some reason, I don't know who was responsible for it, but the question arose as to whether or not it was a good idea for the Beach Boys to release that song as a single. So the second you put an iota of doubt in Brian's mind, all of a sudden, you know, he changes, he gets nervous about whether or not his thinking on something is correct. So he decided that maybe it wouldn't be the best thing for him to do. So he pulled it back and instead released it on an EP that was called Four by the Beach Boys, which obviously in 1964, EPs really didn't really do very much. And it ended up just appearing here on the album and also ended up being a B-side of another single. So as the B-side, the song still charted at number 65 for the band. But the thing is, like, Gary Usher is one of the songwriters that always wrote with Brian a lot. And he was one of those guys who sort of got angry at Brian for backing down. He's like, what are you talking about? You don't listen to what people say. That song is a huge hit. If you don't record it and release it as a single, I'm going to. So, you know, Brian thought it was cool. So go right ahead, you know, do it. So Gary Usher, you know, recorded his own version, released it as the Hondells, and the Hondells version went top 10.
Wow.
So it goes to, goes to show you.
Believe in yourself.
Yeah, really. I mean, that's only a lesson to be learned. Of the two, this is the definitive version. This has got Beach Boys on it, Brian, the songwriter, singing it. Here's Little Honda.
Go! I'm gonna wake you up early, 'cause I'm gonna take a ride with you. We're going down to the Honda shop, I'll tell you what we're gonna do. Put on a ragged sweatshirt, I'll take you anywhere you want. It's all right. Turns, hell you'd be, and hang on tight. I better turn on the lights so we can ride my Honda tonight. First gear, it's all right. Second gear, a little faster, faster. Third gear, and go faster, faster,
faster.
Gotta get that Honda going faster, faster.
It's so funny because this is why this album basically jumped out at me and why I was saying, oh, this absolutely gets included as like the first true classic Beach Boys album. Because when you play it from beginning to end, it's got such great momentum and there's so many great hits on it, even though the songs themselves weren't necessarily hits for the Beach Boys. I mean, that version by the Hondells that Gary Usher put out, and that featured Glenn Campbell and Hal Blaine on drums. Same people that were
the eventually... The Wrecking Crew people.
Yeah, right. Same people that were recording for Brian. So it was really just a matter of, you know, taking just, advantage of the fact that Brian second-guessed himself. Incredible. And that was a hit in September of 1964 for the Hondells. And for the Beach Boys, it only became a minor hit when it appeared on the B-side of their October single, Wendy, on the A side. All right. Now the album gets a little bit deeper. This is another beautiful Brian Wilson melody that sounds, again, like it came from the late 50s, but a beautiful song about trying to escape something that Brian was always great at writing about, probably fantasy material for him pretty much for his whole life, but especially here at this young age. Beautiful song that you don't really hear very much on the radio. It's called We'll Run Away.
We know they're right when they say we're not ready, but all we care is how we feel right now. We'll go ahead just the same, prepared to take the blame. We'll run away.
There's a lesson in there.
What I love about this album is that there are these gems that are unknown. While the earlier Beach Boys songs, the songs that are unknown, you might have a little, you might question, you know, their validity as far as, or their value at least, as far as, you know, this staying power. But on this album, it seems like a lot of these, the obscure tracks even, can really jump out at you. Now, another thing that was obviously huge before we started our list in in January of 1964, where we began our countdown of albums, something that was really popular, and the Beach Boys had a lot to do with it before then, were surf instrumentals, you know, basically surfer tunes. There were, you know, things like Wipeout by the Surfaris is a very obvious example. And that was a trend. There was a great number of bands that were putting out surf instrumentals. There's an entire box set that you can buy with four CDs with about 25 songs on each of them, which has nothing on it but surf instrumentals from 1961 to 1964. So that tells you just how much of it was happening. And the Beach Boys put out their fair share of them. But the fact of the matter was, in the earlier albums, the Beach Boys really were not a particularly impressive instrumental group. They had a lot to learn. You know, they would put out songs like Denny's Drums, which would basically be, the band would stop and it would feature some pretty, you know, ordinary drumming by Dennis Wilson. And there were a lot of instrumental tracks on the previous albums that were meant to showcase the talents of Brian's youngest brother, Carl. Now, in the earlier albums, Carl's playing is, I guess you could say, ordinary. I don't want to make it sound as though he's not...
Mediocre.
Yeah, I mean, well, he was a kid who was learning to play and he was doing what he could. But he wasn't the type... I mean, he was certainly not going to be anybody's guitar hero.
Right.
By 1964, he was actually beginning, he was getting sharp. He was learning his way around. He had he did a really good job of emulating a lot of Chuck Berry's, the things that Chuck Berry would suggest. Again, it's not like anybody would pretty much point at him and compare him.
And say, what a genius.
Right, to say a George Harrison or anything like that. But the fact is that he was getting good. And side one of the album All Summer Long ended with a surf instrumental that features Carl. It was the last time the Beach Boys would release a surf instrumental in their career. They might have released other instrumental tracks, but this is the last time that they would release something you could actually consider to be an instrumental surf hit. It's called Carl's Big Chance. Go. Instrumental track, of course, as I said, called Carl's Big Chance. Very, you know, straightforward.
Yeah. It was okay.
It is what it is. But it's almost like it's the type of thing where you could basically have playing in the background. It would be like
everything is what it is.
Well, I mean, it sounds like it could be like something that would be like suitable for the background of a commercial or something, you know?
Yes.
Something in that order.
Yes.
Well, the album itself, All Summer Long, eventually rose to number 4 on the pop charts, stayed on the charts for almost an entire year, 49 weeks, sitting on the Billboard Top 100. Obviously, incredibly successful. This is around the time also then when Brian really began to dig in his heels as a songwriter and also began to take over his father's role as manager. Basically, you know, putting up with what he had to do with his father. I think Brian began to feel a sense of independence. And I think that he was, as I said, rather than threatened by what happened with the British invasion, I think it empowered him. It made him feel that he had the goods and what was coming over from Great Britain actually showed him that he was in the right place at the right time. And that was certainly true because there were not really very many American acts that could claim to have said that they benefited from the British invasion.
Absolutely.
I'm hard-pressed to think of any, to be honest, who could say that, except for the Beach Boys. So there you have it, though. That's the end of side one. Flip the record over to side two, and the first track that we have here is the song Wendy. Now, I misspoke a little bit when I talked earlier about this song. I said that this was the A side of the single for Little Honda. But I said what it was Wendy was the lead-off track of the EP. So Wendy, Little Honda, and two other tracks, Hushabye, I believe, was one of them, and Don't Back Down, I think, was the fourth, that were on this EP that came out. And EPs were just a bad idea in America. Nobody really got what they were about. And since the songs were available on the album, it didn't sell particularly well. So the song Wendy, since it wasn't a single but an EP, only ended up climbing as high as number 44 on the pop charts. But again, there's a sense of like blossoming genius that you hear with Brian. When the song opens, you have no idea what, it just doesn't even, you know, most songs begin with a riff that suggests what is about to follow.
Sure.
It's this common way that you would write a song. This song kind of doesn't do that. It just, it has these opening notes and you don't even know really, even unless you have the song memorized, you don't know what song is coming. And then all of a sudden, you know, the drums kick in and the song bursts open with this gorgeous Brian Wilson melody. It's another song that certainly should have been a top 10 hit single, except for the fact that either the record company blew it or maybe Brian being a little bit, feeling restrained from wanting to see the song get released as a single, held himself back. But the song deserved it. Here, with the lead vocal being shared by Mike and Brian, is Wendy. Tell you, this is the album that really basically wipes away whatever prejudice I might have once held against like thinking that the early Beach Boys stuff was either insipid or just not, there wasn't enough consistency on their albums. Because when I was doing the research to start this list of ours, the top 500 of the top 40, I'll be the first to admit that I didn't think that the Beach Boys were even going to make the list until we got into like, say, 1966. When we got to Pet Sounds. And that, you play an album like All Summer Long, you're like, wait a minute, for 1964, and I played a lot of albums. Heidi will tell you.
You are playing, you currently are.
I still am. I mean, through any given year, I'm probably playing 50, 60, 70 albums from that time period, trying to discern which are the best four or five. And this album just was so, jumped out at me so positively. It practically leapt off, out of the speakers.
Slapped you.
You really did. I mean, I kept waiting for it to for it to lag, because the other earlier albums do. You get these, these places where, stuff that could be a little bit embarrassing or just not good enough to. Oh, that's enough to pull down the whole album. On this album, there's just so many high points, and Wendy's certainly one of them.
It's all meat.
Yeah, it is. I Get Around, All Summer Long, Little Honda. And now Wendy. Now this next track, it's interesting. It's called Do You Remember? And it's kind of funny because this is the Beach Boys sort of semi-defensively giving us a history lesson about rock and roll. Now you got to remember that by 1964, like where they're coming from, before the Beatles helped to reinvigorate rock and roll, rock and roll did look like it was beginning,
languishing big time.
Yeah, it was dying a slow death. That, you know, in 1963, there wasn't an awful lot happening in the quote world of quote unquote rock and roll. When we opened this series, if you remember, I started by playing hit singles from the pop charts from December of 1963.
It was a sad time.
Really nothing that we played, hardly anything that we played, could have qualified as being genuine rock and roll. So in that sense, you know, where the Beach Boys are coming from is logical. And all of the stuff that inspired them certainly came. They're not being inspired directly by the music from the British invasion. They were inspired by what was happening before the British invasion. Things like Chuck Berry, of course, when they essentially provided them with the chords and the melody of their first hit. All they did was write new words to a Chuck Berry song. But nevertheless, this song, Do You Remember, is them sort of recapping for us history. With one, maybe one exception. Dick Clark was the new kid on the block in 1964. The guy who was basically, you know, had his TV show in Philadelphia and everybody was, you know, playing all the big hits. And the Beach Boys reference him as like the music guru guy. But they probably should have said Alan Freed. In my thoughts, because if you're going back to like pre-Beatles, that would have been maybe more accurate. But nevertheless, that's just a minor point. It's a lot of fun to hear the track. Here are the Beach Boys with, Do You Remember?
Little Richard sang it and Dick Clark brought it to life. Danny and the Juniors hit a groove, stuck as sharp as a knife. Well now, do you remember all the guys that gave us rock and roll? Chuck Berry's gotta be the greatest thing that came along. He made the guitar beats and wrote the all-time greatest song. Well now, do you remember all the guys that gave us rock and roll?
And the chopping didn't get very far.
Goodness gracious, big balls of fire.
Nothing's really moving till the saxophone's ready to blow. And the beat's not jumping till the drummer says he's ready to go. Well now, do you remember all the guys that gave us rock and roll? Let's hear the high voice wail.
Wow, what was that, a commercial? I mean, that song was like 45 seconds long.
Pretty much.
Kidding me?
They just wanted to get on TV, I guess.
Wow, that was short. Like, not a minute and 40 seconds. Unbelievable. Well, they got it in. I think you're right, Heidi. They probably were going to, you know, you throw a nod at Dick Clark because he's the one who's still viable and still around and can help your career. If you're going to talk about Alan right. Freed, it might have been politically inappropriate because at that point in time, Alan Freed was more or less disgraced because of the whole payola nonsense that had gone down. Now, again, what was happening all over the place in the early 60s, pre-Beatles, if you were alive in the early 60s, then you know all about the Frankie Avalon movies and what's her name?
Annette Funicello.
Annette Funicello, right. Oh, the Gidget movies and that sort of thing. There must have been 50 or 60 beach movies a year.
Yes.
That had come out.
The
just
Girl
in
the Mink Bikini.
There were so many that came out. Hundreds of them. And the amazing thing, the Beach Boys never were in any of them except one. There was only one.
Crazy, man.
One movie that that featured the Beach Boys, and this is the title track. It was the name of the movie was Girls on the Beach, and they used Brian's song as the title song for the movie. In the film, they also performed a couple of other tracks. They performed Lonely Sea and Little Honda, which we had just heard. The thing about Girls on the Beach, though, I don't know if you're good at picking this up. This just shows how sophisticated Brian was at this point in time as a songwriter. This song must change key 6 times. And it every time it changes key, it does it for the emotional impact. It doesn't do it in a way that is predictable, but if try to listen and if you'll notice how the song suddenly, the mood of the song shifts in a way that sounds incredibly sophisticated. It is incredibly sophisticated because it's not the type of thing that most people, especially rock and roll songwriters, would do. You know, when you think about people who like, you know, the whole joke about rock and roll is, you know, three or four chords and an attitude, you know? This is Brian just, his brain must have been exploding. This is probably my favorite song on the album because of the immense, phenomenal song structure that he utilized for the songwriting. Here's Girl on the Beach. Track sort of picks up where Surfer Girl left off, and it's like a grown-up version of Surfer Girl sort of on that song to me. Well, let's get this next one relatively quickly. It's one of the minor songs on the album, but it's also a great deal of fun. It's Brian's ode to drive-ins, something that was obviously huge at that time, and you know, Brian being the spokesman for youth culture in the early to mid 60s, it suits him. What's kind of cool is he's also willing to something that would have probably destroyed this song for a lot of people, if especially as far as radio play, is the fact that there's this gaping silence after the solo. But it's rather interesting. Here's John. Let's play this actually into the next track so that I can be sure I get everything in. The next song after Drive In, is sort of an odd compilation of clips of what was of the Beach Boys trying to basically let the audience know what was happening when they were in the studio. Basically, you know, you just hear them goofing around. And
well, that seemed like a popular thing that was going on during that era.
Yeah, it's I don't know. To me,
the Beatles used to do that kind of stuff.
No, they would never do it on their albums ever.
Oh no, but they'd come in and do promo stuff.
Yeah, that, which is a totally different thing. This is the one move that they make on the album, which made me question it, because I'm like saying, you don't want to put this on an album with like great songs, because a track like this is going to get old after, you know, one listen. It's just, you know, how funny is it? It's just really, it's a bunch of, it's outtakes really. But nevertheless, it sits there at track 11 on the album, or track 5 on side 2. So let's hear Drive In into that track.
Every time I have a date, there's only one place to go, that's to the drive-in. It's such a groovy place to talk and maybe watch a show down at the drive-in. Forget about the plot, it'll do very well, but make sure you see enough so you're prepared to tell about the drive-in. I love the drive-in. If the windows get fogged, you'll have to take a breath down at the drive-in. Oh, the cat pressing wide will scare you both to death down at the drive-in. A big buttered popcorn in an extra large tote, a few chili dogs, and man, I'm going broke down at the drive-in. Yeah, at the drive-in. Don't sneak your buddies in the trunk, cause they might get caught while they're driving. And they look kinda stupid getting chased through the lot around the drive-in. If you say you watch the movie, you're a couple of liars. And you remember,
you can prevent those fires
down at the drive-in. I love the drive-in. Down at the drive-in. I love the drive-in.
Okay, boys, take one.
Danny and the Junior set at groove, strike a
shoot.
I should?
Shoot,
quick,
Danny and the Junior set at shoot, strike a boot.
Boot.
Let's overdub a little. A little finger.
No, Clem, no!
Back record, if you put a little finger popping on that, it's gonna be a million in 2 seconds.
Hey, will you take off that hat? You look like George Washington.
Throw you across the river.
Throw me across?
I threw a silver dollar over the night. Throw you.
When you hear the countdown, everyone shut up because it's awful tight.
Yeah,
let's make it.
2, 3, go!
Sitting in my car.
T-shirts in my car.
Sorry.
Outside your lawn.
In the garage.
What?
What's wrong? Broke that tie thing.
Oh, thanks.
Oh. It's his tie thing.
Yeah.
Oh, gee whiz.
I have another one, thank you.
How much are they?
I have two more of them.
You do not.
I bought them for 99 cents a piece.
Of eat it?
I know where you can get
it. There we go.
99 cents.
We're on. Got a better view
really?
Than I did.
I know.
This microphone.
All the way from Hawthorne, California, we're flying over Carl Wilson, who's going to jump 600 feet into a 2-foot cup.
Into a damp rack.
Come on.
Hey, well, look, I'm going to leave it home.
Hey, you guys, just a second. I forgot my note. Just a second. I'll go to the piano. Okay, let's make one, Charlie. You guys ready? Let's go.
They're ready.
And that's that.
That's it.
It's a goofy thing to put on the album. To me, it's a shame that it's there. I would have even preferred an ordinary track than that. But
they didn't ask you. They forgot to ask you, hon.
Even there's something that's slightly clever in that Brian had that thing put on the end. He said, "I forgot my note," and he hit the piano note, sang it. Because by doing that, what he's doing is he's basically introducing the next song, because the last track on the album is in the key of that note.
Uh-huh.
So I'm wondering if he might have just done that on purpose.
That was clever.
To go into the last song. So there you have it. I hope that, I think we got up well above 75 degrees and maintained somewhere between 75 and 80 in here with the Beach Boys.
I'm still want to work on my tan.
All summer long. I hope that this is a decent substitute for a week in Bermuda or Aruba.
No.
Or even Puerto Rico or even
anywhere
Disney
but
World.
Here.
But this will have to do, unfortunately. So we'll be back on Friday, of course, when we continue our series, which we are doing right now on Simon and Garfunkel. We're going to do show number 3 on their history, which is going to cover actually their third album, Parsley, Sage, Rosemary, and Thyme and such. So hope you can join us then, also at 5 p.m. And meanwhile, we leave you with this track called Don't Back Down. Take care, everybody. Have a great week and stay warm.
Yay.
The girls dig the way the guys get all wiped out. With their feet in the air, you can hear them shout. They're not afraid.
Don't back down, don't back down.
Tries to put me down and says his school is great. I tell him right away, now what's the matter, buddy? Ain't you heard of my school? It's number one in the state.
Hey, hey, take it away! Get
so
that ball and fight!
To your school. For football and track, I'm proud to wear it now. When I cruise around the other parts of the town, I got my decal and bag. So be true to your school, just like you would to your girl. On the football game and I'll be ready to fight. We're gonna smash it now. My girl will be working on her pom-poms now and she'll be in.